This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History is now streaming on Hulu.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. A quick warning before we get into this next segment. In it, we talk about violence our guests experienced at the hands of law enforcement. So if you or someone you're with is sensitive to that kind of thing, we wanted to give you a heads up. My guest is Kaylee Reese. She's one of the greatest boxers in the world, 19-7 overall. She has two championships in two weight classes. She's also an up-and-coming actor. She was nominated for an Independent Spirit Award for her part in Catch the Fair One. That was her acting debut. She grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, African-American on her father's side and Native American on her mother's. She's a member of the Seekonk Wampanoag tribe. She's been fighting since she was a teenager. She went pro in her 20s. She wasn't a big money fighter, especially at first. To make the rent, she worked at group homes and as a bouncer at clubs. Now it's been a couple of years since the last time she was in the ring, because she's been focused on acting. First, there was Catch the Fair One, which she also helped write and produce, and now True Detective Night Country on HBO. Night Country is set in the mining town of Ennis, Alaska. A group of research scientists have turned up dead in the snow, naked, with no explanation for why they vanished. The chief of police is played by Jodie Foster. Reese is her former partner. Things between the two of them ended badly. In this scene, they're at the hockey rink. The bodies are, too, frozen in a giant block of ice. It looks like this case might have something to do with an old case that the two cops worked together, so Reese's character suggests they reunite.
What do you want? This tattoo was on Annie's body.
So? It was on the forehead of one of your guys.
Maybe. So what?
So what? It's the same case. We can work together and figure out Annie.
No. I'm not working with you again ever.
You think I want to work with you?
I do, actually. Yeah.
Take a look in the mirror, Liz. No one can stand you. Except for that poor kid Pryor. But you'll be breaking his heart real soon.
Get out of my scene. Go on.
Off. You know where to find me.
Kaylee Reese, welcome to Bullseye. I'm so happy to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. This is exciting.
When you're working on something this intense, is it an intense scene when the cameras turn off or the opposite?
Completely opposite. I mean, there was such a contrast with the story that we were telling. And when the cameras were off, we had such a family-oriented, jokey, laughy, light kind of mood. You know, we had discussions about some things going on in the scene, but something like that, it was actually a lot easier to get even meaner or even darker in those times because we had the contrast. So there was no tension between me and Jody or anyone.
I mean, you're a relatively new actor. Were you comfortable jumping back into the kind of choices you had to make when things started back up? You know what I mean? Like, were you comfortable switching back and forth?
You mean in scenes or just a back and forth between two? Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, back and forth between being on camera and not, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I get this question a lot as far as, are there any parallels or similarities to boxing, or have I brought anything from being a boxer into acting? And one of the biggest things that I didn't even mean to do is just something embedded in me is, you know, when the quote unquote bell rings, you know, I'm in there, I'm hyper focused on the goal, and I have a job to do, and I'm all the way in, checked in. And then when the bell rings and I'm home and I'm out the ring, I'm out the ring. So it's, you know, that click and that bell rings, it's kind of an in and out thing that I've been doing for almost over 20 years now. So when the camera's on, when it's rolling, I'm embedded. When I'm going to work that day, especially for this character as Navarro, it gives me the ability to check all the way in and then check all the way out.
Is that true even when you have a fight? Like when you have a real fight and you're done and you go home that day, are you able to feel like a normal person?
It takes a while for it. You kind of have like the post-fight, you know, the adrenaline dump. And then, you know, there's the hype of the fight, depending on what kind of fight, especially being an elite athlete in my position now where I'm a, you know, world champion fighting elite level. It takes a day or two for me to come down. And then it's like this post-fight depression. Like I just defeated this thing. It's celebratory. And then it's like, okay, now what do I do? Because, you know, you work out 2-3 times a day, 6 days a week. It consumes your entire life for, the, you know, for 3 months. And then it's like, now what? What do normal people do? So it's a weird detachment. And I found even with, you know, my very new career with acting that there is a detachment type of, I guess, mourning almost, where it's like, you know, you have to separate yourself from the task with boxing and with acting. It's almost like a ceremonial thing that I actually, my best friend, helped me with my first film to kind of like detach myself from the story and the character. So it's very, very similar. Yeah.
What's the ceremonial part? Like, are there things that you do every time?
This one was a little different because it was such an entity of a giant story that we told over 120 days. There was a lot more that was invested time and energy and love and just everything. I put my heart and soul into it. So the first film I had, Catch the Fair One, that, you know, we put our heart and soul into that one too. But it was kind of a thing that we just wrote down things about the character. Like we just kind of made this up kind of a thing. But and then we kind of like burned a little paper and said goodbye to the character kind of a thing. It was just something that I'm like, it was just a representative thing that represented, okay, now this character can rest. You know, I would appreciate it. Thank you. And kind of rest. And it wasn't anything that anybody told me to do. I was just explaining to her what it felt like, especially telling such a dark story. It was a very cathartic process, but it was a very triggering process to tell the story of Catch the Fair One based around missing and murdered Indigenous women because it's so close to a lot of people that are close to me in my community. So I needed to do something to kind of separate me from it because it was an important story to tell, but it was such a hard story to tell.
I've had a lot of actors on the show. I have not had a lot of fighters on the show. So I want to ask you some questions about boxing.
Absolutely.
When did you start fighting?
Oh, man. August 24th, 1986. No. I started fighting. It wasn't my first sport. I started fighting when I was about, say, 12 or 13. I got into boxing. But I didn't start officially fighting until maybe 13, 14, where we had not sanctioned amateur fights. We called them smokers, where we had, you know, all the gyms would get together on a Friday night and have these matched up fights. And my very first fight, I was 14 and I got my handed to me by this older lady that didn't look like she looked like a librarian. And that was my turning point, whether I decided whether, that's not for me, or the way I took, well, how do I make that not happen again? And then from there, didn't have much amateur experience because, you know, we didn't have women's division in the Olympics for boxing up until 2012. So there really, really wasn't any higher level that I could shoot for, especially my weight class. The area I was in, it wasn't too much. I had to travel. I didn't have financial means to travel. So, and I don't have amateur style. So I decided to go pro in 2008. And that's when my professional career started. But, you know, I used to fight in the street a little bit as a kid. You know, being one of five kids, having older brothers, you know, they're always like, hey, let's try some wrestling moves in the K type of thing. So I've always been a little tough kid.
Had you sparring to that point taken, you know, full strength blows?
Yeah, I had. And it was, I started, like I said, a friend of my mom's, he's a wampum jewelry maker from the Narragansett tribe. And I got wind that he used to fight. So I used to bother him at his booth, you know, during power. I was like, hey, can you teach me some things? And he would like kind of ignore me until he finally gave in, came by, put a bag up, showed me some things. From there, I fell in love with it. Then I went to a gym, took some classes. The teacher took a liking to me and I started training, started sparring. And I thought I knew some things until I ran across this little librarian-looking lady that kickboxed, but we had a boxing match. And I'm like, it's like I forgot everything that I learned up until that point. And that's when I realized that this is so much more than just being a tough person and being able to fight, street fight. This, you got to relax. This is actually an art. Like, this takes a lot more than I thought.
Why did you want to learn to fight? Why were you bothering this guy?
I was very sporty as a kid. I played basketball, played softball, but it was just a solo aspect of fighting. Like, one of my favorite movies growing up was Karate Kid and Rocky One. And I just didn't ever see any karate master or boxer around where I grew up, but I just thought that was really, like, he has nobody around him, which I felt like I didn't have anybody that really completely understood me. I had, a house full of siblings and my mom, but I just didn't really feel like anybody understood me. So I'm like, the solo aspect, you got to fight. And then I don't know. And it wasn't because I was an angry kid and I just wanted to beat people up, because I was always the one sticking up for the kids getting bullied. Like, I didn't like when kids got bullied. I was always the one, like, to beat the bully up. You know, that was my job. I wasn't a bully, but, and I didn't like confrontation, but I just liked the art of fighting. And that just what really attracted me to boxing.
We have so much more to get into. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR. This message comes from Apple Card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase. That's 3% on products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card, issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Carvana. Selling your car? Visit Carvana and enter your license plate or VIN. Answer a few quick questions and you can get a real offer in seconds. When you finalize your offer, Carvana will pick it up, so you never have to leave the comfort of home. Visit Carvana.com or download the app.
Why is everyone so obsessed with traditional wives or trad wives on social media? This week, we're talking about the viral videos of women making marshmallows and mozzarella from scratch, and how behind the sheen of calm kitchens and cute fits, there's some interesting pessimism about our modern world. And that's worth digging into. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
This message is brought to you by Wondery. In the climate-ravaged year of 2072, the city of Pura protects residents from global catastrophes, but a dark secret threatens Pura's very existence. Binge all episodes of The Last City ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Kaylee Reese. She's a 2-time champion boxer and actor. You might have seen her recently in True Detective Night Country. She plays Evangeline Navarro on the show, opposite Jodie Foster. You can stream the whole season now on Max. Let's get back into my interview with Kaylee Reese. It was also a point in your life where you were going through a lot of different stuff. I mean, like, between the, you know, when you were a young adolescent, like, you really went through it.
Yeah, I mean, I come from a single-parent household. I'm the only child between my father and my mother. And then my father had 4 kids. My mom had 2 of us. So it's just a mixed, jumbled family, but it's us. We don't do half-brother, half-sister thing. So my mom and my dad got divorced when I was really young, confused about it. I'm the first generation female on my mom's line getting raised in Native American tradition, ways, cultures, et cetera. My grandmother, great-grandmother couldn't even say who they were as Seekonk Wampanoag women, because it was bring a lot of bad energy to the family that they worked for as the help after King's Philip War and all that. So being different than my other siblings, getting raised like that, going to powwows, going to different ceremonies, but also getting raised in like an urban area where there was just a bunch of different looking kids anyway. I just was like the token Native kid. But then if I go outside of my territory, I look like just a black girl trying to be Native. So I didn't understand where I fit in. And I was always just trying to be part of the crowd or be part of this. And I'm also Cape Verdean, but I didn't really grow up in a Cape Verdean traditional household. So you don't know how to speak it, or you don't know how to do this. And I'm like, all right, not enough of that, not enough of this. And, you know, not really knowing my sexuality, like as far as me being attracted to girls or just kind of being attracted to people, it doesn't really matter. And I really didn't understand that. And also growing up in a Christian household where my mother was Native American and religion, and it was just all confusing. I did not know where I fit in. So there was just so much confusion as far as where I belonged. When I walked into a boxing gym, it was the first time that I was only thinking about, all right, I have 3 minutes to jump rope. Okay. It wasn't 3 minutes to jump rope. This happened to me. Oh, my God. And this list of other things that used to go through my head. It was just that one thing.
it's such an all-consuming thing too. Like you can't, even just that training, even things like jumping rope, but certainly being in the ring, it's like you can't have other stuff going on. It's too much to do the thing that's on your plate.
Absolutely. It's a very solo, goal-oriented, very present type of art where you can't be focused on, I hope I'm going to win. You have to be focused on this person right in front of you right now.
I went to art high school, but I had a classmate who was an amateur boxer named Paul. And one time I said to Paul, I'm like, how do you do that? And he said, well, the first time you get punched, it hurts really bad. But then the ones after that don't hurt that bad.
It's like a soul shock, I guess. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Does that match your experience?
Yeah, it was like, again, like I got hit and it hurt and I forgot everything that I was going to do.
I mean, I got hit one time. I'll tell you what I did. I cried and ran away.
Well, at least you know fighting's not for you. It's fine.
I've seen video of you entering the boxing arena. Can you describe your walk-on to me?
So, you know, boxing is it's an entertainment business. You know, we're on this ring. It's up. It's like a stage. We have the personalities. People become their own characters and fighters when the bell rings. But the spectacle of the colors you choose, the nickname you have, the song you come out to, it gives you an insight of who that person is without ever having to sit down and talk to them. You know, you can tell what kind of fight they're, cocky fighter or the confident, quiet, cool. But I've always just been really proud of who I am and where I come from because it's very unique, but I'm just proud of it. I'm just really proud of it. So, you know, the line I come from, the tribe I come from, the warrior people that we are, Seekonk Wampanoag people, being so proud of being a warrior is just in my blood. And I have a chance to put this type of representation, this medicine out to the world, no matter what it is. We have what we call your medicine. Your medicine is you're undefeated as a fighter and you have a beautiful voice on a podcast. You know, that's your medicine. You put good energy out into the world and nobody can tell you what your individual medicine is. Mine just happens to be I'm really good at boxing and I get recognized for it. So I just started incorporating coming out to songs that I grew up listening to at powwows, all the tapes that my mom had playing in the car or in the house. So I just use that in the same way that I grew up in powwows. I love it. Absolutely love it. And when I'm not in my territory, I extend the invitation for the people of wherever I am to do that with me. Like, thank you for having me on your territory. Whatever song or whatever your tradition, your ceremony is, dance, I invite you to bring a rattle, bring a drum, bring your voices, bring your good energy and dance your style of your territory, of your ancestors and honor your land, your ancestors while I'm here. So thank you for having me. And that's just something we always got taught. And I just kind of tweaked it modernly into my own space and my own quote unquote squared circle. And that's what it is. It's me putting those prayers out and that good energy for my people with my people.
You were a bouncer for a while and you're not that big. I mean, you're a medium sized woman, but you're not huge. And obviously, you're capable of defending yourself or using physical violence. You're a professional boxer. But, you know, I think a big part of being a bouncer is convincing people not to be violent, right? And mm-hmm. often that's done by being enormous. What was it like to be a bouncer and have to, like, metaphorically throw your weight around when you are pretty small?
I started bouncing when I was 18, and there weren't female bouncers in Rhode Island. I mean, I'm sure there were, like, everywhere else, but I never saw any female bouncers. So it wasn't like I went to a club one day and I seen a female bouncer. I was like, I want to do that job. It was easy money. You know, you get cash at the end of the night. My cousin, Matthew Godfrey, is also a fighter. He works my corners now, and he's actually enormous now, too. He started bouncing, and he's like, dude, you could be great at it. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I get to spend a night in the nightclub at 18 years old and get to potentially fight people. This sounds fun. So it was more or less like a female cops, you have to have this aura. You have to have this attitude to command respect. And I've always understood that I've had that type of energy. It was just knowing, having the attitude of, I know I can it up if I need to, but I'm not going to walk around like I can. And that's the type of weird energy that people like to mess with. They're like, I know she's hot. She's really quiet and she's not saying much. She's not the center of attention. So let me go mess with her. That's kind of how I dealt with that. And I knew I could physically handle myself. So I just kind of had that attitude. Like, I know what I can do and I'm just going to kind of be over here minding my business. It was a fun job for a while. I won't say that.
You were assaulted by a police officer at one point.
I was while I was bouncing. And this was, I had been bouncing for maybe 8 or 9 years already. And I was at one of the toughest clubs in Rhode Island. And this was a few months after a really bad motorcycle accident I had. And I kind of got into a dark depression, couldn't work, couldn't do anything. And then my first night back, I had my knee brace on, kind of like on very light duty, sitting on a stool, pointing to the bathroom, pointing to the exit. That's what I did. I wasn't in the mix of things, but I just needed to work. And at the end of the night, my best friend at the time and another female bouncer, she had gotten assaulted by a guy and got knocked out cold. Once they clear out the club, I went to go see if she was okay. And I heard, give us some effing air. And I'm like, what? Now, mind you, we know the cops. We have security on our shirts. We have to get certified, all that good stuff. And I hear the same thing. He repeated himself. And I seen the other female bouncer get shoved out of the way. So picked up my hands. And Mr. Officer Daniels from the Providence Police Department proceeded to swing at me, grab me. I tried to throw a few defensive, like, oh, my God, what's happening? I had a knee brace on. He's 6'3", over 300 pounds. Started hitting me, pepper sprayed me, got me to the ground, was calling me all kinds of names, and then handcuffed me, pepper sprayed me again, picked me up by the cuffs, threw me in the car. Long story short, he told my manager that I had to apologize so I could leave, and I was very confused as to apologize for what. Needless to say, I apologized. And I got let go, but he didn't realize that we have cameras in the club. And he just did that under the worst, meaning the most clear camera we had. And he also proceeded to write a bogus statement saying I went after him, not knowing there was cameras there. And yeah, that was a fun day at work, quote unquote. I thought it was my fault. I was confused. I had the FBI call me and I was just really like, what's going on? But needless to say, he has been assaulting patrons forever. So I was the first one that actually went through, followed through, had this whole lawsuit, and got him off the police force.
How do you think about how long you want to fight?
So when I first started, I didn't want it to, you know, I was looking at who's hot right now, how did other people's careers go, other women's careers go. I wanted to give myself, you know, I didn't want to overstay my welcome. It's really sad when you see a fighter who's just been in like 10 too many fights too long. And, you know, they're just motor skills and speech. It's just really sad. I didn't want to be that person. And I had other things I wanted to do. So I didn't want to be in boxing past. I was looking about 36, 37. Like that seems like around when people retire. Women usually a little later, like 40, 42, maybe.
That's about the age you are right now.
That's the age I am right now. It is.
As I understand it, you're not retired at this time. Is that so?
I'm not officially retired yet. No, I won't do it. I won't do it yet. I'm not satisfied. But I, you know, health-wise and everything else, all these boxes have to be checked. So, you know, I couldn't have imagined that I'd be where I'm at now. So things have happened a little differently. So we'll see. Things make sense. I'm not going to force anything because I've accomplished a lot with boxing. I'm very thankful for boxing. But, I'm not done yet.
I mean, I don't have to tell you, but like there's both a cumulative effect of taking those blows and there's also always the potential of something catastrophic happening.
I know. And that's where it's a weird balance right now as far as, you know, I'm in a position where I don't hear, oh, Kaylee needs to hang it up. Hopefully she retires. It's, yo, when are you coming back? And when are you coming back? When are you going to fight again? So it's a nice position to be in where I don't have to fight anymore. Like, I don't have to financially, I don't have to fight to make money. And I've accomplished way more than, like, 6 world titles in 2 weight classes. It's just insane to me. And I've done a lot with boxing. And it's how I even got fond with acting. So I could, you know, It's a good end point. But my last fight, my last two fights, health-wise, I was training on E most of it. And what bothers me about my last fight is just that I know I could have done so much better, but I did the best I could with the body and health condition that I had at the time. So that's partly part of it. The other part of it is, like, there's a few fights that I want, but I don't need them, if that makes sense.
We'll wrap up with Kaylee Reese after a break. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
Instead of scrolling mindlessly, engage mindfully with the NPR app. With a mix of on-demand news, stories from this station, and your favorite podcast, you can relax without shutting off your brain. Download the NPR app today.
Most of the plants humans eat are technically grass.
Most of the asphalt we drive on is almost a liquid.
The formula of WD-40 is San Diego's greatest secret.
Zippers were invented by a Swedish immigrant love story.
On the podcast Secretly Incredibly Fascinating, we explore this type of amazing stuff.
Stuff about ordinary topics like cabbage and batteries and socks.
Topics you'd never expect to be the title of the podcast. Secretly Incredibly Fascinating.
Find us by searching for the word secretly in your podcast app.
And at MaximumFun.org.
You're listening to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Kaylee Reese. She's a champion boxer and the star of True Detective Night Country. How do you feel about the part of acting and an acting career where you are making this kind of art where you have so little agency? Like, somebody has to give you a job for you to work. And, you know, unless you're Meryl Streep, you probably get turned down for a lot of work for every job that you get.
Yeah, I have a different experience with this because I come even from the world of, I've never had a live in-person audition. I mean, I come from the new world of all these audition tapes, self-tapes, and I hear the horror stories about people who are just doing self-tapes now versus having the option to be seen in person. And I'm like, well, I can't even say, oh, I know what you mean, because this is all new to me. So I'm just like, wow, this is great. If I, you know, before I got True Detective, it was like, send me whatever audition that you guys get just to get me in front of the camera, just to get me working, because I'm thinking, just like boxing, just like anything else, I have to work. I have to put in the work. No one's just going to give me a role to just do. I have to put in my work. I don't know this craft. I don't know this art like this. I have a niche for it. Okay, let's perfect it. That's where my mind was. So it's an interesting career and field to get into. And it's nerve-wracking, because you don't want to slack off on perfecting your craft just because you don't have anything in front of you. But there's nothing paying the bills, so you have to have other jobs that you might take away from time away from your craft. I've done that with boxing too. I've had years where just no fights, but I still got to go to the gym. So I got to make sure I got to stay ready so I never have to get ready.
A weird thing about acting is that it is, frankly, fundamentally embarrassing. And it also is something where you can't be good at it without a certain kind of shamelessness. Like, you can't be embarrassed about the choices that you're making and still do a good job of acting. Is that a challenge for you to, like, let go of the feeling that you might do a bad job or you might feel silly or ridiculous?
This point in my life, I know that you can't please anybody. And if you're worried about what everybody else is going to think, then it just takes your focus completely off the goal and the enjoyment of what you're actually doing. And I learned that no matter how much you do everything that everybody wants you to do, there's always going to be somebody that's going to be pissed off or say you did bad or say you didn't do a good job or you did this wrong or whatever. Once you notice that you're not going to please everybody, that goes out the window. my goal is to just be as authentic as possible and not worry about what anybody else interprets what I'm doing. As long as I know that I'm telling this story authentically and that everybody in the story is on the same page, the director is happy, the storyteller is happy, we feel authentic in these characters in the story. But the good intention, I mean, the rest is kind of like a byproduct. If great people like it, great. I hope so. I hope they get it. The ones that don't, you know, it is what it is. I don't think you should get caught up in everybody else's perspective is going to be or what everybody's going to think.
You, as an adolescent and as a young woman, pursued a lot of kind of destructive and dissociative ways of being in the world, trying to get away from the trauma that you experienced. Now that you're in your 30s, creeping towards 40, are you able to hold the kid that you were back then? Like, are you able to live comfortably or as comfortably as possible with that person you were and those experiences that you went through?
Absolutely. If you would have asked me maybe a couple of years ago, not completely. But yeah, it was one of those things where, you know, the cliche, you can try to drown out your issues, problems, thoughts, but when you sober up, no matter it's like figuratively speaking or literally speaking, they're going to be there waiting for you. So the same type of attitude I'd have of getting through the hard thing in front of me physical is the same thing I kind of apply to the mental issues or the mental things that I was trying to block out, and really just understanding what they were and honoring and protecting that smaller Kaylee and being able to tell her it's okay, it's not your fault, or it's okay, this is what happened, and really holding her close and being proud of everything, good, bad. I'm human. I've made some dumb decisions. I've said some dumb things. I've done some dumb things, but I've learned from them. And I'm not ashamed of them anymore. I'm not walking around feeling guilty and so hard on myself either. I actually could say that I'm proud of myself. And it's been a lot of work, a lot of sitting in those drunk holes or those just really down holes. You know, I used to self-harm. I used to drink. I used to smoke. I used to try to do anything to just get to quiet my brain. And the best way I could do that was to get blacked out drunk and then get up the next morning and go to basketball practice. But nobody knew because Kay was just a little angry one wandering around, you know. But I'm happy that I am able to hold that little girl and make better decisions and be proud of everything, because I honestly wouldn't have changed. I wouldn't have changed a thing.
Kaylee, you're married, so am I, but we all kind of have a crush on Jodie Foster, right?
It's my homie, yo. It's normal. I can understand. Yes. Yep.
Just wanted to check in on that front.
It's a valid crush, bro. It's a valid crush.
Well, Kaylee Reese, I sure am appreciative of all this time you've shared with us. It was really nice to get to talk to you.
Thank you very much. Such a cool conversation, man. I'll come back anytime.
Kaylee Reese. You can watch her in True Detective Night Country. It is streaming now on Max. She's great in it. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California. You're in Los Angeles. It was raining crazy hard, and then it stopped raining. Then it rained again, then it stopped raining, and it looked like it wasn't going to rain anymore. But guess what? It's raining right now. Don't let them tell you it never rains in Southern California. Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our producers are Jesus Ambrosio and Richard Roby. Our production fellow at Maximum Fun is Danielle Huesias. We get booking help from Mara Davis. Special thanks this week to Lucy Little for recording our interview with Bill Bradley, and to Renee and Cody at Milk Boy Studios in Philadelphia for recording Kaylee Reese. Our interstitial music is by the great Dan Wally, DJW. Our theme song is Huddle Formation by the Go Team. Thanks to the Go Team. Thanks to their label, Memphis Industries. Bullseye is on Instagram, where we share interview highlights, behind-the-scenes looks, and more. At Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is where you can find that. We're also on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
Listen to Embedded for moments that stay with you.
I could smell the smoke. I could smell the dust.
Voices that resonate. Stories that change the way you think about your life.
How did we get here?
The Embedded podcast is NPR's home for original documentary series. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. These days, news comes at you fast. But the truth? Getting there takes time.
There's something that hasn't been disclosed yet.
Embedded is a podcast that takes the time to look beyond the headlines.
How did this happen? How did we get here?
With original documentary storytelling. Listen to NPR's Embedded wherever you get your podcasts.
Jasmine Morris here from the StoryCorps podcast. Our latest season is called My Way. Stories of people who found a rhythm all their own and marched to it throughout their lives. Consequences and other people's opinions be damned. You won't believe the courage and audacity in these stories. Hear them on the StoryCorps podcast from NPR.